Thou art saved.
The living room's dark, save for light being cast from the big TV screen and the imminent sunrise that's teasing the one starry sky with whispers of morning.
Hey, George.
Hey, Lions. How's it going?
Wah, 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 wah. Wah. Wait, no, it's like a wah. It's like a wah. Wah. I don't know, dude.
No, it's like,
who knows?
It's a me, Wario. You know, like that kind
of. Yeah. I'm not confusing it with Waluigi, am I?
No, I mean, they're all copies of clones of copies. I mean, basically, because it's like, you know, if you cloned Mario poorly, you get Luigi. If you clone Luigi poorly again, I think it then goes to like Wario, you know? And then if you clone Wario poorly, you know, like it's clones and hard determinism all the way down.
It's photocopies of photocopies. So what did we play? We played, I think the correct way to say the title is Wario Land : Super Mario Land 3. But I think
you
have like a crappy like GameStop dust jacket, like, and they wrote like Super Mario Land : Wario Land or Super Mario Land 3 : Wario Land on it. Because you and I were arguing about this and neither of us have the original box. And I have seen it written in official places both ways.
Yeah, because that's the problem, is that on the title screen, it says Wario Land, like, across the top, you know, it's like the head billing, and it goes Super Mario Land 3, you know? So, but the, yeah, I've seen it referred to, and the Game Boy game says Wario Land across the top, Super Mario Land 3, but I can't remember if it says on the side, you know, but the way I saw it listed was Super Mario Land 3, : Wario Land.
Yeah.
You know?
And here's the annoying thing, is they went on to make many sequels to this game, and they're all just Wario. So it's like Wario Land 2, Wario Land 3, right? Like, it's not Wario Land, Super Mario Land 4, or Wario Land, Super Mario Land 5, right? They didn't just keep doing that forever. They only did it for this one.
So, which makes me think that, you know, they weren't exactly sure that it was going to, they weren't sure this whole Wario ship was really going to take off, you know? So they were just kind of like, oh, well, you know, it's Super Mario Land, but it's, you know, it's a me, a Wario, you know, or whatever, right? And so, and then they were like, oh, and then and then the third picture is just them swimming in money, you know?
Well, and, that's funny, because the whole game's got like a weird money mechanic we have to talk about later. What I think is funny is that the people at Nintendo sat down and they were like, okay, we've made Super Mario Brothers games, like, you know, we've made Super Mario Land games on the Game Boy, like, there's so many Mario games, we want to make another platformer because people love platformers, but like, let's maybe ease off on Mario, let's make a game about, and one person in the room went, Luigi? And somebody else went, no, fire him. Wario. No, it's this other original character.
Well, and doesn't Wario, like, doesn't that mean something in Japanese?
I feel like the wa
prefix, like, means.
Yeah, I think you're right, which is why Waluigi sounds ridiculous to American, or I should say, you know, native English speaking ears, but it makes sense because it's like opposite, or, you know, the negative of
something
like that. I think you're right, and Wario just sounds better than Wa Mario, because it's like, oh, it's funny because it's almost the same, right? Like,
yeah, because it's like, if I remember correctly, and I may be way wrong on this, but for instance, like, Ma can mean, like, that symbol for Ma means demon, which is why Ma Jr. from Dragon Ball Z is what Piccolo enters his name into in the, you know, Tenkaichi Budokai, because that makes sense, because he's the son of Demon King Piccolo. So Ma Jr. makes no sense to us, but it's like, oh, well, Ma means, like, demon or evil, you know?
So if I can bring this back to Nintendo, does that mean that the English translation of Mario's name is Demon Ryo?
Yeah, and then this would be Evil Demon Ryo.
How?
You just keep.
I've been on the internet for a long time. How have I never seen somebody make this reference before?
I know, right? That just the only logical reason could be is by the time you are educated enough to actually make that reference, like you know the language well enough, then you realize that it doesn't make any sense. You know, like if our brains were small enough or simple enough for us to understand them, we would be too simple to understand them.
So does that mean we're some kind of like impossible joke making machine? We're like, we're smart enough to make that joke, but also dumb enough to think it's funny.
I think we are just smart enough to make that joke and think it's funny, but not dumb enough to let it go on for so long that we don't talk about our nostalgia experience for this particular game.
That's good, because I was about to try and work in like a Solidus thing, like a plasma. Anyway, one other thing I do have to mention, you know, just the tiny little bit of factoids people get at the top. So this game came out in 1994, and when I play Game Boy games now, I have to frequently remind myself how unbelievably underpowered that system was, because if you compare it to other things that were going on in 1994, you would be like, oh, this is what they were capable of. But it's because miniaturization is hard, right? So like the Game Boy, like it just couldn't do as much. But you know, keep that year in your mind. The other thing is, I think it's important to mention that this game was a listener request. So if there's a game you really want us to play, there's a chance, if we want to play it and you ask for it, that we will actually play it. So just throw it.
And to be fair, there's a chance too that even if we don't want to play it, we'll play it, because I didn't really want to play this, but
that's yeah, all right.
But somebody said, you know, hey, you guys should play this, and I was like, I don't know, sure, all right. And then I started playing it, and I'd be like, and I didn't want to do this myself, but you know what? The fans, they needed us.
I started playing it, and I was like, wah! Anyway, so my nostalgia goggles for this are actually... I've been thinking all day if there's a way to tell the story without making it sound not insulting to this game, and I just don't really think there is. When I was a kid, and I would go play games at Brian's house, Brian never brought his Game Boy to my house. I don't know why. But I only played Game Boy at his house, or if I borrowed his Super Game Boy. But we played RPGs, and we would like take turns. So like we would have two separate save files, and like one was his and one was mine, and we would literally just like watch each other play the same game. I don't know. This is what
God, I miss having don't you miss having that kind of time?
Yes.
You know? I mean, like, you saying that just feels exhausting to me, because, like, and to be fair, again, I did exactly, like, stuff like that, you know, but to say, like, so, literally, you took an RPG, which is already a huge time sink and a huge time investment, right? To the point where, like, we struggle to play RPGs on this show because of the time investment it takes in order to get a solid experience with it, and you doubled it for no reason. Like, none. It was probably a turn-based strategy game, but instead of just taking turns on the turns, you took turns playing the whole stupid thing.
Yeah, yep. And we would do it with long games like Chrono Trigger that are like 40, 50, 60-hour experiences, you know? So all of that is to say, Wario Land was my it's-not-my-term game. So, like... the way you might be waiting in line at a grocery store or something, and you would play like Threes or Solitaire or whatever the game you said you play is on your smartphone.
Dice Hunter. Dice Hunter is a great game for all ages.
Brought to you by Dice Hunter. So I would, that is how, like, Wario Land was my scrolling on Twitter while I was bored, waiting for my turn. And the thing is, the game is short enough and simple enough. I mean, it's a platform. It's simple like a platformer on the Game Boy, but like the game is short enough and simple enough that I could pay a fair amount of attention to how Brian was doing in his current run of Chrono Trigger and like also be playing Wario Land. So as soon as we sat down to play this, I was just like, someone near me should be playing a 60-hour JRPG for me to really get the full experience of this. But that is how I remember Wario Land, is that it was like an also-ran.
Well, and this is nice, because I was a little worried about mentioning this to you, but I didn't play this game. I actually replayed Chrono Trigger. So So that way, perfect. So that works out, because now you've got that experience of while you were playing this game, I was playing Chrono Trigger.
That would make the next like 75 minutes really difficult. But I'd be down for it if I thought you were serious. We could figure it out.
So my nostalgia experience for this is I don't have one. I did play Super Mario Land on the Game Boy, and I loved that game. I specifically remember that. Isn't there like a submarine level?
Maybe in one of them, in the first or second one, not in the third one.
No, not in this one. But I do remember that. You know, I remember Super Mario Land because I didn't. Not this game, but I didn't have it, so people would lend it to me. But I would, you know, play it on long trips or in the car or whatever, because you know, you could only play the Game Boy for about 2 hours in the car before you had to find something else to do. Because that was before, because battery life was long enough, and before rechargeable batteries. So your parents would yell at you saying, you know, like, stop, we're not going to spend $20 in batteries for you to not be bored. You can learn to be bored. That's life. So I had not played this game. I had played the better one.
That phrase is not completely off base. I don't think.
No, which is, I mean, but then again, yeah, that's like saying, you know, next to this 5-star meal, like, you know, was better than this other meal. That doesn't necessarily mean that the other meal was bad. It just wasn't, you know, your typical Super Mario Land. So I didn't bury the lead. I didn't say, you know, like, oh, you know, like the listeners, there's still some air of mystery on whether or not I thought this fucking game was any good, you know. So with all of that said, visuals.
So I think for every Game Boy game we've played, I've had to say some version of, I'm not blown away by these graphics, but I understand that they are Game Boy graphics. Right. And I actually think the graphics in this game are pretty decent Game Boy graphics. Like, they're like, Wario looks distinctly different from Mario. Right. Which,
yeah, you would not confuse them in a lineup.
Yeah. And on that tiny screen, that's not saying nothing, because making his sprite large means you're losing a significant portion of the screen. Like, the entire screen is only like 4 or 5 Warios tall. Right. It's not huge. So like, if I had to guess, I would say Mario probably does not take up the full horizontal of his tiles, and Wario almost definitely does, right? So they were like, well, we don't really want to make him way taller, but we can make him way fatter, because then he will look obviously different from a silhouette. You know, you'll immediately be able to tell he's different, even though he's dressed very similarly and he has similar features, big nose, the mustache and everything. So like, they really went with, I mean, they couldn't do colors, right? So they really went with the only variable they could reasonably adjust, which was his, you know, x-axis. And that I really liked. I also really liked the amount of variability in the levels, like the level design and the tile sets that they use for like each area, world, land.
You see, that's the kind of uncertainty I like to hear from you, because if all of a sudden you just come in and you say like, for each biome or something like that, then I'd call you on it, because you know, that's research. This is the Lyons I like, the one who clearly has done nothing but play the game and has not read or looked anything up online. Oh, it's good. It's delicious.
Okay, it's Super Mario Land, so let's say the land, right? So
okay.
So each land looks pretty distinctly different. But what I don't love is they basically designed like 5 enemies and they're like, this is it. Just make your peace with it. These are the only enemies you're going to see for the entire game, because that's where the action is. And that sucks away from the uniqueness of each land, right? So you go into a new land and you expect new enemies, but you don't get new enemies. You get the same enemies. And there are a few enemies that are only in the later lands that are not in the earlier lands. So like, there's a little bit. And then like, you see more of the harder enemies and fewer of the easier enemies. So there is a kind of progression, but I would have personally, like, I can't, this is like, I can never prove this, but I think I would have taken one whole less land to free up all that memory if the other 5 lands or whatever all had unique enemies.
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I was going to chide you to say, you know, like oh, so, you know, you fly over to, you know, London or Europe or something like that. You get off, there are people everywhere, and you're like, this is exactly the same as America. You know, like all the scenery is different, but look, there's no different sprites. There's no different enemies, you know, and people are like, we need to, he needs to go. Like, this is,
you just get right back on that plane, okay, buddy.
Just turn that around, take that back across the pond, because we do not want that here. So two things. One is for Wario's sprite, it would not surprise me if Wario's look, like the way that the Wario that we all know and love or hate or whatever you want to say, if that was a product of what they were able to design on a screen this size. You know, I don't know for sure that this is the introduction of Wario, but I think that it is.
And if this isn't his very if this isn't his introduction as a character in the universe, I think it might be. It's definitely his first solo game. But I'm actually, okay, here's why. We're going to go deep into the back catalog of knowledge now. The reason that I'm not positive...
He first appeared in 1992 in the 1992 Game Boy game, Super Mario Land 2.
Didn't you just chide me for this?
I did. Do as I say, not as I do. No, because I was like, we can go back and forth, but I'm doing it in situ, which is still me. I came to the table. The important thing is I came to the table unprepared, you know? Just swinging for the fences.
I'm imagining saying that at work. Like, whoa, what matters is that I'm making this up right now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking it up on the fly. He first appeared in 1992 Game Boy game Super Mario Land 2 as the main antagonist and final boss. So, but he did premiere on Game
Boy.
Right,
so what you were about to say still holds water.
Right, which is the fact that, you know, probably they were like, we need a anti-Mario, you know, the Negaverse Mario. We need Mirror Mirror Mario. Design that on the Game Boy, you know? And so then they did, and they were like, here's what we got. And they're like, okay, now, artistic representation, what would that look like? Because he is very well characterized, and does it, the sprite really does look good. And to me, you know, because he was created a little bit later, I think that, you know, he actually has more of a look and a feel to him than, you know, classic Mario did. So I thought they did a really good job there. One of the things with the enemies that they were not varied, and that is true. But one of the things that's really interesting about this is that, you know, in most Mario games, if you get hit by the enemy anywhere except with your feet as you're stomping on them, you know, you die, you know, you get hit, right? You know, it's bad. These enemies specifically have basically hitboxes, you know, and I thought that visually they did a good job with the enemy design, letting you know what parts of the enemies you can touch and what parts you cannot.
Yes,
you know?
Because they almost exclusively do it through triangles. So it's like, oh, mm-hmm. That guy is carrying a spear. That thing has a giant spike on its head. That thing is carrying some big pointy object. And all of those points are denoted with triangles. So you spikes right. are triangles. Spiky enemies are triangles. So you basically learn to fear triangles.
Squares, good. Triangles, bad. Which is not untrue, because that's the thing, is that, like, even if you were to take, you know, like a square brick, right, and hit somebody with it, that would suck. But you know what would make it really dangerous is if you were hitting with an edge, because then at that point, it's not a brick anymore. It's a triangle.
go on.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Stepping on Legos is bad, but if you step on a D4 like that, that'll wreck your whole day.
Stepping on a D6 is an annoyance. Stepping on a D4 might make you miss work.
Stepping on a D4 might make you flash white with rage, and then you wake up 3 days later in jail.
We don't have little kids or anything.
Nope. No, I literally questioned my belief in a loving sentient universe. You know, like. But anyways, that's not the point. The point is that they did a good job with enemy characterization, especially with, you know, so all the enemies have triangles, which are bad, but specifically the swamps, I thought they did a good job relaying that one. That's what kind of made me notice it.
Oh, because they're flat on top.
they're flat on top, which is completely new. That is a new thing, you know? So I saw a swamp. I was like, avoid the swamp. And then I got to like a dead end. And I was like, that swamp's coming for me. So then I jumped up because it's the only thing to do. And then the swamp passed underneath me. I was like, do I got to jump on top of that guy? I think I got to jump on top of that guy. And then I did. And it worked. And it was awesome because squares are good and triangles are bad.
Yeah, I'm with you that any individual sprite, I think, is fairly well rendered, and it's fairly clear which parts you can touch and which parts you can't touch. But like, there's, you know, the half dozen of them, and that's it. And that bummed me out a little. They did do completely unique bosses, right? Every land has a completely unique boss. They don't look like any of the enemy sprites. They're totally, you know, it's not like it's a Goomba but bigger, right? It's a completely unique enemy that's on theme for that land. And
they can do palette swapping.
Yeah, well, this one's gray. This one's grayer. Yeah.
Yeah. Less more gray.
So I do appreciate that. And like I said, I get that they chose more game over less game, but with more visual variety, because they definitely made that trade-off, right? These are Nintendo designers designing a Nintendo game that carries the Mario name. You don't put your C team on that. Like that, these people were probably, you know, seasoned game designers. So they surely recognized, like, okay, we have this much memory and it's like not a lot. So this is all we can do. Unless we cut a corner here, then we can make more of this, or we can cut a corner there and we can make more of that, but we cannot do both, right? Unless there's no music or something. Like, there's just no way to really have it all, right? You cannot have your cake and eat it too. But I don't know, in like, especially in the last land, because I did manage to beat it, and going through the last land and seeing the exact same enemies that I saw in the first land, just in smaller quantities, I was like, what are you doing here? Like, if you were going, like, imagine you're playing Super Mario World. If you were going through, you know, Bowser's castle, like the final castle, and it was just all Goombas and what do you call them? Koopa Troopas. Like, part of you would just be like, this is not very spectacular. Like, why does he have common foot soldiers as his, like, elite guard?
Or, I mean, why does he have some of those foot soldiers at all?
Well,
you know, and the answer is because, you know, they are actually, you know, citizens of his kingdom, and they're just conscripts, and you're the madman who's, you know, in a psychopathic fashion tearing across the land, you know, destroying the blocks, which apparently have like people in them.
No, they are people. There are people who have been they are toads who have been transformed into the blocks.
Blocks,
magic,
right. Which you are then literally
smashing
two
bits. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So we need to talk about the hitbox, because it sounded like you were pro on the hitbox. Can you explain yourself?
No, I'm not pro on the. I'm not pro on the hitbox. The hitbox is sloppy garbage.
Oh my God.
What I'm saying is that they did a good job telegraphing where. I mean. Let me put it to you this way. Is the hitbox is sloppy, right? Can you imagine if those characters were designed in such a way where, because, like, for example, the character with the spear, right? The spear is the hitbox, and the hitbox is a sloppy mess, right? But if that spear wasn't there and still the hitbox only took up a portion of the enemy, like, that wouldn't be a game. It'd be nonsense, you know? Like, it just wouldn't work at all, you know? So, in the same way that, you know, I've got an issue with the writing of Metal Gear Solid, not the plot. I've got an issue. I enjoyed the character design and how that showed you where the hitbox was, not how the hitbox was handled itself.
So I'm going to task you with keeping me honest about this, but I want to give a mention on the visuals for two things that are really more mechanics. So we need to circle back on these later. The hitbox is sloppy garbage. And part of the reason it's sloppy garbage is because you have multiple ways you can interact with an enemy. You can get hurt by them. You can pick them up and you can, let's say, charge them. You can, like, you know, help shoulder smash them, basically. And it's almost like there's three little hitboxes kind of Venn diagrammed over each other. Because if you come in from this direction, you get one experience. If you come in from this direction, you get a different experience. If you come in from that direction, you get hurt, right? So it's I understand a little bit mechanically, and we'll pull it apart more, but like visually, I was often not very confident if I could engage an enemy, because I was like, I really like the jet helmet. I don't want to lose the jet helmet. If I touch this enemy, am I going to lose the jet helmet? Like, I think that's the part where I can kill it, but a minute ago I got hurt, right? Like, it's just not always clear. And then the other thing is, I don't like the way jumping works in this jumping game.
Is that a visual or a mechanic note? I think that's,
is a mechanic, but the reason I'm mentioning it here briefly, and we will dig into it more in mechanics, is just, I don't like the way it looks. I do not like the way the jumping looks, because you move at a constant rate of speed. So you go up and then you immediately start decelerating down at full speed. There's no like jump arc. And I think again that this was an intentional choice, because an accelerating and like a speed curve, an acceleration curve on the Game Boy screen would probably be really hard to.
But they did it with Super Mario Land.
They did. But I think that there were times that Super Mario Land was really hard and you had to make a precision jump and it was hard to see because the refresh rate of the Game Boy screen. Right. Mm. Whereas with this, the big super floaty jump, it looks so unnatural, but it is a lot clearer where you are on the screen.
Well, and actually, I do think that I did have a touch on this in my notes for visuals, because it's this is not research, because I just happened to watch this video that kind of touched on frames.
I tripped and the video bent over in front of me.
Yeah, and you know, like, whatever. But no, actually, I watched this video like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and then we played this game, and I was like, oh, this kind of relates directly, I think. Basically, it's the question is, how many frames are spent in, you know, like, there's when you hit the button, the amount of time it takes for you to get up to top speed, mm-hmm. and then the amount of time it takes for you to slow down, right? The longer that is, the more momentum you feel like you're carrying, you know, and the shorter that is, the more it feels like you're kind of like rocketing up, you know. It's one of the examples that they gave was in Sonic, right, is that, you know, the amount of time it takes for you to start running to get to full speed is insanely long, but that's because the whole purpose of the game is to get up to speed and then stay at that speed. So thus speeding up and slowing down is the challenge. So that's why that takes so long, you know? So for this one, there's no acceleration. It is, you're moving at the top speed of the jump immediately. You do not accelerate at the beginning. You do not decelerate at the end. You are, the same number of frames are spent when you are ascending versus when you're at the top of the jump versus when you're coming down. So visually speaking, it is nearly, if not perfectly, even. Well,
and you know, you also can't run. Some of the helmets mm-hmm. give you the little shoulder check thing. And again, we will get into this more in mechanics, I think. But so that means running, moving, you know, in any direction, left or right, or up and down, are all happening at the exact same speed.
Yeah, exactly. And that is a very interesting design choice. And so there's no real great place to to put this in, so I'm gonna shoehorn it in now. I have a theory, which is that Wario games, right, or at least the Wario Land games, were Nintendo's way of beta testing mechanics for Mario games. So
that's not unreasonable,
right? So basically, they, like you said, you know, they're not gonna you know, fiddle fart around with their main title. They're not going to throw some like brand new stuff out there unless they've kind of beta tested it or seen it somewhere first, you know. I mean, even in like Mario Odyssey, where, you know, he does the thing where he's like able to possess like 15 different, you know, things, like similar stuff can be found in other games, you know. And so they were like, okay, we're going to take this principle and we're going to apply it here. We're going to really highly polish it. It's gonna look really good. But I mean, this was in the forefront of gaming, man. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of exemplars to point to.
Well, and I mean, when it comes to 2D side-scrolling platformers, they were the exemplar. Everyone else was trying to crib off of them.
Yeah, so if they're like, well, we've got a whole bunch of new stuff to try, we're not really sure. They basically, I think, after making so many Mario games, they had a giant maybe pile, you know? And so they were like, well, we gotta just make the call on some of this. They're like, what if we made a Mario adjacent game. So it's not like we're just making, you know, like Super Meat Boy 4 or whatever. I don't know. You know, like, but you know, like just something that's like clearly a Mario ripoff, but you know, it's like, oh no, this is a totally different thing. We're going to try all this weird stuff. So they're like, you know, what if we had a Mario adjacent game where we could try all this sort of stuff, but it wouldn't taint the main title. So if it completely flops, then it, you know, whatever, it was a Wario game. Everybody talks about the messy Wario game that they made. So I think that this is an example of that, where they're just kind of like, how is this jump better or worse? You know, in my opinion, the answer is worse.
It's way worse.
And I think that, Nintendo also decided that because this did not make its way into later video games.
No, I think the main thing they wanted to experiment with was variations on how you interact with enemies and variations on how you interact with the world, because at this time in history, right, like this has changed since like Super Mario 64 and Galaxy and now Odyssey. Like there's lots of insane things that Mario has been put up to, but generally speaking, I honestly can't think of a time I've ever seen Mario stand comfortably on top of a thwomp. I honestly can't think of a time I've ever seen Mario shoulder check someone to death, right? Like, or pick someone up and, you know, throw. Well, actually, I can't think. Maybe one of the power ups in one of the stupid games I never played. But you know what I'm getting at. It's like, to say we want to have Mario interact with the world in this way and have the world be interactable in this way, you're going against a lot of pent up, like, mental inertia, where it's like, oh, I would never have attempted to jump on that thwomp because Mario doesn't touch thwomps, but Wario can, because Wario, you don't know what the hell Wario does. So, like, I think similar to how when they wanted to make a terrible game, they have it star Luigi. I think with this game, they were like, we have some things that are just like, they're Mario adjacent, but people will not attempt them if they see Mario. So maybe if we have this Mario-like character that isn't awful like Luigi, people will be more open to trying Mario-esque things. Like, this is a thwomp, but it's a thwomp you can stand on. So I think you're probably onto something, but it's... I feel like using Mario or Wario over using Luigi is hilarious, because you would think they would have done all of this stuff with Luigi and been like, oh, this is what a Luigi game is like. But I mean, burn, geez, Nintendo.
I do not know what it is culturally with Nintendo that they have against Luigi and also Waluigi, but like, you know, the hierarchy is clearly Mario, Wario, Luigi, then Waluigi. You know, like, for whatever reason, they are just not having them some Luigi.
Waluigi at least is like, he's like an anti-hero. Like, people think they're cool for, like, they're like, you know, oh my, you know, when I play Mario Tennis, I play as Waluigi because he's different. But nobody likes Luigi. Like, it's just, and Nintendo wants us to like him so much. They did a year of Luigi, and it was some of their worst game sales ever.
Stop trying to make Luigi a thing. It's not a thing. So I think that visually they were trying some new stuff where, you know, they were saying like, okay, well, what if you could interact with bad guys in a conditional way, you know? And I think that, you know, you're correct in the sense, because I'm trying to think through other Mario games, and I don't think that they brought back enemy conditional interaction where it's like the enemy can only be hit in certain areas. You know, like, generally speaking, it's like you can hit them on the head, or like, you know, when they're in there, for instance, you hit them on the head and then they go into their shell and you really can't interact with them at all.
Yeah, you know? There's I can think of some enemies that are like, oh, you can only hit them from the back, right? Like, you because, you know, Mario has like a punch kick kind of thing that he got in the Mario 64 era, so like, they toyed with that a little, but mostly it's, is it safe to jump on them right now or not? And that's communicated in a very different way visually than they communicated, you can never touch this part of them because it's pointy, but you can always touch this part of them because it's rounded and you have a shoulder dash attack.
And this definitely may be stretching, and we've basically been kind of in mechanics for a little while now, but whatever. But is that they so enemy conditional interactions, right, is not something that they went back to, but they did go with you can interact with this enemy in a non-hazardous way that is player driven, because, you know, so like basically they took the enemy and they said, okay, well, for Wario, they were like, well, you can only hit him here, here, or here, right? And that didn't work out too well. But they said, like, well, what if that was interaction was driven by the player, and then you got Mario's spin jump, which allows him to step onto enemies that otherwise he would not be able to.
That's true. And I okay. So,
and that's probably a stretch, but
no, I don't think it is, but there's, all right, I swear to God, this is going to be my last mechanic-esque thing, and then we can go back to where we're supposed to be. But I just realized that the way Wario picks up enemies and throws them is so visually different and so, like, viscerally violent that I honestly forgot for a moment that Mario can absolutely pick up certain enemies. Like, you can pick up, you know, when Koopa Troopas go into their shell, you can pick up their shell and then you can, like, drop kick it and use that to take out other enemies and interact with the world. But it's so, that's very visually, like, playful and silly. Like, you know, oh, we're playing kick the can, or like, oh, I'm, you know, I was walking down the street and there was a big pine cone, so I ran over and kicked it. Ha ha, yahoo, right? Whereas what Wario does is grab people by their throat, hold them up over his head like freaking Broly, and then hurl them the way you might throw a football, face or ass first, into another creature just minding its own business, and then they go bouncing down the screen and die. Like,
yep.
That visual is so uniquely Wario that I literally forgot that Mario can pick up lots of different enemies, because I said it, like, I'd re-roll the tape if I cared enough to edit it that way. Like, I was like, oh, you know, Wario can pick up enemies and Mario can't. But no, of course Mario can. It's just he does it in a playful Mario way, and Wario does it in a Wario way.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, and I think that, you know, kind of the whole visual style that they did with this was very much so like, let's kind of see how all this plays out. You know, let's try a whole bunch of new stuff. We'll see how it goes. And I would say that 80% of it didn't work. But I mean, arguably, if the overall goal was to see what in this grab bag of stuff we weren't sure enough to throw into a Mario game can work, and we still make tons of money selling it, I'd say it all worked.
Yeah. Well, and there's no doubt that this game, I mean, the, you know, Super Mario Land 2, which had him as a villain, but then this game, which has him as the hero, cemented Wario in the canon.
The protagonist.
Okay. that's fair.
I mean, you just went on for a minute how he's grabbing people by the throat and throwing them down a hallway. That's not what heroes do.
All right. That's fair. This is all fair. But you know what I mean? This cemented him as a character that they were going to find some way to use in future games, because Wario has gone on to have, like, a rich experience in games, but just not really like platformers. It's mostly... Mm-hmm. He's in other, you know, like Mario Kart, Mario Tennis, and he's in Brawl, or Smash Brothers, rather. He's got the WarioWare games, which are all like little mini puzzle games that have nothing to do with platforming. So he became a Nintendo fixture. Like, his look, his attitude, the way he moves through the universe, like, all that stuff was cemented at this time in history. And yet they decided, like, maybe platformers aren't the best use for this character.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree with that. As far as visuals go, I mean, you know, yes, the lands are varied. I had one other kind of throwaway note, which was that the lava to me didn't look like lava.
It doesn't look like lava at all. I have this in my notes.
Yay! Okay, so it wasn't
me. Time I touched it, I was like, oh, I died instant. Oh, it's lava. It's supposed to be lava. It's bubbling like it's lava.
because I did the exact same thing, because especially it doesn't really help that at least the level before, if not two levels before, but definitely the entirety of the level before is all water-based. Mm-hmm. So you're swimming around in the water all the time, and then it's like, ooh, look, more water. Oh, no, it's not water. Yeah.
And it does move differently than the water moves, but, I mean, just make it spikes. It was on, like, a 3-inch screen. Will you just freaking make it spikes, please? Like, spikes, I know what spikes are. You've taught me in this universe that triangles kill me. Like, just put a bunch of triangles down.
Triangles are bad. Yep. Exactly. Triangles are bad. That's all you got to know. And then the one other thing, and this visuals or mechanics, whatever, hated it. I hated the lava scrolling level, the one where like the lava was like scrolling to the side and it was a giant wall because
it was terrible.
That's yeah. Because I mean, let's just say that, you know, I'm Wario and at the end of every level, I get a certain amount of money, right? And I am using that money to purchase a house, right? I was so over budget on that level because I died so many times. I was hemorrhaging money. Like, I went in and I budgeted, you know, to increase my total net revenue by 300 coins, right? That was going to be my drop to bottom, my net income, my drop to bottom line, right? And then I was over time, over budget. And at the end of it, I was just like, I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you, you know. But I didn't care for it.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you 100%. I got into that level and I almost immediately died. And I was like, oh, that's lava. There's an impossible vertical wall again, where spikes would have been a better choice because this makes no damn sense, right?
Yes, triangles.
There's an impossible wall of lava that is, you know, vertically scrolling across the screen. Okay, I see what they're going for here. Oh no. And then I just kind of like, I was like, okay. And I restarted the level and I beat it on the second attempt. And I was just like, oh, thank God. Because I had that moment where I was like, this might be the level.
Yep, this might be it, gang. For me, it was not the level. It was relatively close though, because I did get like that if you... You know, if you assume that some of these old games, okay, so some of these old games, you know, they're not the best, right? They're not terrible, they're not the best, but there's like, you know, like how your sim has, you know, sleep and hunger and this, there's like a rage meter, you know? And so for every minute you play, your rage comes up a little bit, and then sometimes you'll beat a few levels in a row and it'll actually like kind of decrease a little bit. But really, that's your timer. And my unit's rage per unit minute in that particular cross-section of time, or what I call my rage rate, spiked dramatically. Like if you took the derivative of that, the derivative of my rage rate was still a quartic function. Yeah.
Hilarious. Good math joke.
Yes. Well, you would know. You speak the language of math.
Should we move on to... Speaking of speaking, should we move on to audio?
that was a mint of a transition in that it was a Whopper theme.
that was such a stretch, but somehow I still found it funny.
Okay, so here's literally, and I know that me having garbage for audio notes is kind of a running gag, so I decided to shoulder into it this time.
Really going here, for it.
Yeah, like, whatever. So literally, I meant to write, this is what I meant to write for audio. My audio note was meh. But then what I actually wrote was meg, and I liked that better, so I left it. And then I didn't play it for a few days, so I came downstairs and I was looking at my notes and I was like, audio, Meg, what the hell am I talking about? And then it all came together for me. But nice. You know, it's fine. It's not it's not great.
Here are two things that I think happened inside the offices of Nintendo at some point. They essentially decided that Game Boy games needed to never, ever use sound as the sole indicator that something happened, because there is a very good chance that you are playing with it either on silent or with busted headphones or with the volume down so low because your mother swears to God she will turn this car around, right? Like, if I have to hear one more Pocket Man battle one more Pocket Man over there, right? Like, it really feels like they knew the speakers were tinny. most little kids aren't like going to carry good headphones around, and most adults don't want to listen to tinny noise played at full volume for hours and hours. Well, let's say 2 hours on end before the batteries die.
Yeah.
That I think they actually designed the games to make sound way less crucial. And music for setting tone, sound for communicating information, right? I truly and honestly believe that. I also truly and honestly believe that someone in the offices of Nintendo, when they were like, oh, well, here's how we need to make Wario look. Here's how we need to make his world look. Here's how we need to make him sound. Oh, what does it say there in your notes for how to write the music? Oh, it says to just write catchy Wario music, but worse. Oh, so like the kind of Mario ragtime thing. Yes, like that, but terrible.
Just worse.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you listen, and the thing is, you know, like I play this, I'm not playing on an original Game Boy, I'm playing on a Super Game Boy, which means it's coming out of a screen and out of speakers, it was never meant to, I understand all that, but this music is very catchy, because I honestly believe they wrote catchy tunes, and then added in, like, I don't even know what you would call them, like, disharmonies, where they, like, they're intentionally adding clashing notes to the chord, because there are chords that have bad notes in them. There's no way they did that by mistake. These people are experts at game making. They would not be like, oh no, we accidentally shipped a game where all the music is off by a half step. Like, they definitely did that on purpose, but the tune is still catchy, so it still gets stuck in your head. And have you ever tried to intentionally hum an off tune beat? It's horrible.
Yeah, no, it's not. It is something that you do to people you don't like,
right?
You know,
like, oh, I'm gonna get Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, but in a minor key, stuck in your head.
Or what was that? This is tangential, but what was that video that we watched just like crazy in college? From it was like the ring 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 banana phone. Boop, 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 boop. Yeah, that. And then like the person gets it in their head and like loses their mind and they beat each other to death. Yeah, that. So for anybody who listening who got that joke, just, you know, at us, because we've thrown some deep cuts on this show before that I was surprised if anybody got, but I would be a little heartened if somebody has to be like,
I feel
no,
like
I,
Banana
I
Phone was popular, but with a narrow segment, right? Like, you had to be a certain age at a certain time in history and into certain culture to be like, right, because I could imagine someone being like, oh, I remember playing that for like my 3-year-old when they were trying to, like, you know, play with blocks. And it's like, no, that's not what we were referencing.
Yeah. No, you had to touch me. Now look what you did.
That's what we're referencing. That.
So this is that of Banana Phone. Like, everybody is used to.
That was some SAT sentence right there.
Yeah. Wario music is to Mario music like the Banana Phone skit is to Banana Phone.
And,
you know, where it's just,
and, honestly, right. Like, the intentional awkwardness of it kind of grew on me, but it, like, it's not good music. I'm pretty confident it's bad on purpose, but by the end of the game, I was like, okay, like, I see what they were, like, it's appropriate, right? It's on theme. It's on the brand they were trying to establish. So it feels okay. Like, it's like, this is what it's supposed to be. But because I know they basically just took catchy Mario music and made it, like, discordant, it's hard to think, like, but what about good music? Like, it's a weird, and the limitations of the Game Boy hardware and the expectations for what they probably, like, the situation they expected you to be hearing this music in was very different than what I was hearing it in on this playthrough. So you just add all those things together, and it's just not good. It's not bad, but it's not good music. You wouldn't say, like, oh man, I'm going to go on Spotify and stream me some Wario Land.
I mean, that's a great litmus test for somebody you want in your life, you know? Like, if they're like, oh yeah, I hopped on Spotify, I made a couple playlists. It's like, oh, what are you listening to now? It's like, oh, I'm listening to some Celeste. Ooh, yeah, no, it's good. It's good, Celeste. And, you know, some Shovel Knight. Oh yeah, Shovel Knight. And some, you know, Super Mario Land 3 Wario World.
Hmm? What was that
come
last
again?
One?
Surely you meant Super Mario Land 2. No, the third one, you know, with Wario. Ooh. I'm going to call the police. I'll give you a 10-minute head start 5 minutes for Celeste and 5 minutes for Shovel Knight, but that's it, man.
But I'm gonna punch you in the knee once for Wario. No, I mean, it's just not, like I said, it's on brand, it's on theme, but I couldn't, every time I noticed myself trying to hum along to the music, I just felt a little annoyed. And that's a weird feeling. I was just like, this isn't bad music per se. Like, it's accomplishing its goal. I just don't enjoy that. That's it. It's not bad music. It's not enjoyable because it's not supposed to be. Mm. It's supposed to sound a little off, and it does. The sound effects are, I mean, there's nothing to say. They're Game Boy sound effects, top to bottom, left to right, and all day long. They're not bad. They're not good. They're just, it's what they had to work with. So, Game Boy sound effects.
This game was made in Japan. It's top to bottom, right to left.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yes.
I hate to make this such like a cartoonishly short segment, but I really have nothing else to say about the audio.
Yeah, I got nothing. You know, like, just it's the you know, like okay, Wario sound effects. Say it with me. Say you matter. I matter. Louder. I matter. Shut up, Wario sound effects. You don't matter. You know, like,
yeah.
So, gameplay?
Yeah, and I mean, the controls, you know, some games the controls don't get much of a shout out. Sometimes they matter a lot. Here, I feel like they kind of matter a lot just because I went into this game thinking I was playing a Mario game. And to be fair, that's on me, right? But for the first...
Well, I think it depends on whether or not you thought the title was Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land or Wario Land Super Mario Land 3.
But I mean, like... A good way to think of it is if you've ever played any of the games where you can play as Luigi, he moves differently than Mario, but not as dramatically different as Wario on Super Mario Land 3 moves from Mario in Super Mario Land 2, right? The fact that there is only stillness and top speed. There is no concept of acceleration or deceleration, including when you jump. It's just very... floaty. It felt honestly like playing a game on my graphing calculator because everything moved with just a perfectly smooth, you know, line for an acceleration curve. And I didn't love it by the end of the game, but in the beginning of the game I was like, this is unplayable. How can I make a jump? How can I land on an enemy? I can't do anything. And then I was like, oh, because I'm trying to play it as if he moved like Mario, and he super doesn't. So, like, I did eventually internalize the floatiness of it, but I still didn't like it by the end. I just mastered it by the end.
See, and that did not bother me to the degree to which it clearly bothered you. I don't know why. I don't know whether it's like I got a little bit of a heads up from you beforehand to say, like, hey, just, you know, Wario jumps differently. So I was, like, prepared. What I found completely intolerable is the way that jump worked with trying to get out of water.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, because that threw me hard, man, because basically, like, you've got to be normally with Mario, you jump, and if you press the button, like, you press, and then, like, you'll get towards the top of the water, and then you press hard, jumps out, right? This doesn't quite work like that. So basically, there were a bunch of times where I was just basically drowning in 2 feet of water, you know, where I'm just desperately trying to get out. And I'm just like, I can make it. And I just couldn't make it, you know. So I found that really, really frustrating, especially when, and this is not unique to Wario games, but it is where, you know, basically, if you got tagged, you went back to small Wario, regardless of what power up you
had. Yeah, because the power up wasn't small, big, big with power up. It was small power up. There were only those two states.
Right. Correct. Even though you could be big without a power up, but that you always had 2 hit points. You never had more than 2 hit points. You had one hit point.
You could,
or 2
no, you always, if you were big, you had at least the starting helmet. That was technically a power up,
right?
Because the bull helmet is the same as the starting helmet, except you dash harder and farther.
You see, the way I looked at it was that the starting helmet was the, like, mushroom, you know, In my head.
The reason I didn't think of it that way is just because Wario wears a cap. Like, the helmet distinctly allows him to do the dash. He even puts it on the loading screen. So, I don't. Maybe they didn't establish that he wears a cap just like Mario does this early in his canon, but knowing the character, I recognize the helmet as not being his normal hat. So I was like, he's either small or he's powered up. He doesn't have a big with, you know, plumber's hat on.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, to me, it was, you know, because it's, I just went with the small, big, and then.
Well, mechanically. And then that was the. So it's, you know.
Yeah. But so anyways, but the moral of the story being is, since I was always one hit away from losing all of my powers, you know, like, that was really frustrating, especially in the water levels where they had those dumb seahorses that, you know, were just a huge pain in the butt. So I did not care for the jumping out of the water mechanic. One other thing that I wanted to mention that you kind of touched on was the jet helmet.
Yeah, that was my jam.
I love that. Oh, I love the jet helmet. And so why did you like the jet helmet? Because I think I know why I liked it, and I think I know why you liked it.
I mean, one reason is you can skip gigantic segments of some of the platforming, right? I mean, it's easy mode helmet, so that's fun. But also because you move at a faster speed for the longest amount of time. So that helmet gave me the greatest confidence charging an enemy that had their back turned, because with the starter helmet and the bull helmet, you can charge an enemy when they have their back turned, and sometimes when they're facing you because the hitbox sucks, and that works out fine. But with the jet helmet, you just instantly are moving at full speed, and you'll move for the furthest. I mean, it's huge. It's like 5 times as long as the bull helmet makes you rush, and you'll dash over like the void. So like, you'll just continue from like platform to platform. And so there were times when I was like, oh, what if this enemy keeps walking and I stop just short of his back? But with the jet helmet on, you're gonna catch him.
So, and you know, they say in law to like never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. But I have one other question for you that will solidify my case, which is in Super Mario World 3.
Super Mario Land.
You know, Super Mario World 3. Different game. I'm now referencing a different game. So the NES.
Super Mario Brothers 3.
You're right. Yeah. Super Mario Brothers 3. Excuse me. Super Mario Brothers 3. Right. Yeah. For the NES. With cheat codes or whatever you could pull together, right? What was your favorite power up?
Oh, the P-Wing. Well, the P-Wing, if you're just trying to dick off, it would be the Tanuki suit if you were trying to make people question whether there was a fair and loving God, because they think that they can defeat you no matter what, but you can turn into stone and they just wait them out.
Yep. I really liked the Tanuki suit. I also like the Hammer Brothers suit. Like, that was really cool.
I remember struggling with that as a kid, but I bet as an adult I would enjoy that a lot more.
I also really like the frog suit. It's if you got on a water level, because that would just make water levels amazing, right? So so all that being said, so yes, the P-Wing was fun if you just were like, yeah, you know, whatever. But like, you would play with the P-Wing for a little bit and then you get bored with it, and but you know, like the Tanuki suit or whatever, like those were really fun and interesting. So the power up that you and I both like the most is the one that makes you play the game the least. I mean, that's why you like it. You said it yourself, is you get to skip large parts of the platforming in a platforming
game. I can't.
That's not great.
I cannot refute what you're saying. Though I am stalling to try.
I'm trying to buy time.
Yeah, I mean, the game is short enough that I wouldn't say I was using it like the warp flute, where I was just like, oh my God, I can't stand the idea of playing through this section or this level or this land. But when you got, and because the levels are designed that you cannot just P-Wing over the entire level, right? You can't just jet hat over the entire level, because there are walls that go up beyond where the camera is. So even if you jump up above the camera, you can't, you know, just jet through the entire level most of the time. So when you can jet past like a long segment, that kind of makes you feel like you're giving the middle finger to those stupid little triangles down below. And so like it's, mm-hmm. it's powerful enough that you feel super powered when you're skipping like a big difficult platforming segment, but it's not so overpowered that you're like, why am I even playing the game? I'm just skipping every level. So I don't disagree with your premise entirely, but I think they executed it well enough that it's not like the Warp Flute or the P-Wing where you can just skip entire levels.
And so my thought to kind of, you know, approach it from another way is that, so the thing is that, you know, like you said, is that it's not like, you know, a warp whistle where you're just saying like, okay, I'm going to start up stage one. I'm going to warp to stage nine because I basically don't want to play this game. You know, it is not that, but what it does do is it allows you, like you said, to skip large chunks of it potentially. So what that means then is that the challenges presented do not make you want to master the skills in order to master the challenge. They make you want to skip the challenge. And if you mix together a poor hitbox with poor jumping controls and, you know, like poor interaction with enemies in general, that is what it's going to do, right? Is that it's going to make you say like, okay, as opposed to when all of a sudden, let's take, you know, because it's just a game that we did recently, like let's take Dead Cells, for example, right? When all of a sudden they throw four different enemies together, right? You know, you could probably most of the time just roll dodge past those. You'd miss out on some gold, whatever, you know, but you could just, you know, dodge past that whole area, right? But, and nobody's checked it out, check out the Dead Cells episode. Anyways, but, and all this will make sense. But anyways, you can basically skip those parts, but you don't. You stay there and fight, right? Because you want to learn to master the game mechanically in order to overcome that challenge. Wario Land doesn't really engender that. It engenders you wanting to skip over hard parts because you never really feel that it's going to be handled in a way that it's going to be satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I cannot outright refute what you're saying.
You just don't like the way it feels.
The thing that I'm honestly struggling with is I don't remember actively disliking this game as a kid, but I played it for a very specific reason under very specific circumstances. I am also now playing it for a very specific reason under fairly specific circumstances. And so I can confidently say, and I won't give away my rating for the game, but I can confidently say I would not reach for this for funsies. But I didn't. Mm-hmm. I did finish the game, and I didn't finish it begrudgingly. I did want to finish the game. Right. I did want to overcome the challenge of the boss, right? If the final, if you beat the game strictly through platforming challenges, and you could just skip over the platforming challenges with the jet helmet, that would make me more readily say like, yeah, I obviously didn't want to play this at all. But the fact that I did get satisfaction out of overcoming the bosses, which are not really platforming. I mean, there's a little bit like where you have to kind of jump up because they're up near the top of the screen, but like they're not really platforming challenges in the same sense as like going through a level. And those challenges I did enjoy overcoming, right? So you're not wrong. And I don't disagree with you. It's just sad, I guess.
And that's the thing, and you know, not to bury the lead or anything like that, but yeah, no, I mean, like I'm not saying this to say like and all I have said all of this to lay the foundation for it. The game is atrocious and terrible and should be, you know, buried in a landfill along with
E.T.
E.T. Yeah. Wow, that's just that poor game, man. I mean, like, I know it's atrocious and was kind of like the forerunner of the backslide of the video games industry, but man, when two people just off the cuff are like, oh, like E.T., yeah, that's not great. So I'm not saying that, but what I am saying is that the game is not well honed or well polished enough to the point where it engenders you, like when a whole, like if they will hand you certain levels of challenge, you're like, I can do this, I can do this, and then there are some parts where it's like, I can't do this, and it's not because I feel like the issue's on my end, it's because I feel like I'm trying to put together this, you know, Lego fortress while wearing boxing gloves, you know, like, so I just don't want to do this, the part where I have to put on the individual pips, like, I'm just going to skip that part because that's a huge pain. The rest of this I can probably do and find some joy in it, which again, this is a Mario title. That's very uncommon for Mario, which to me comes back to, it's kind of a hodgepodge of stuff that they were kind of trying, you know, like the coin mechanic for midpoint saves.
Yeah,
like, that's
weird, actually, that's one of the things in my notes I wanted to make sure we spoke about, because the whole game is about money, right? Literally the entire game is about you getting money so that you can get a thing at the end. They show you how much money you've accumulated at the end of each level. When you die, you lose money. When you have to continue, you lose a lot of money, right? So, like, money is everything, and the game has multiple endings, and the ending you see is based on how much money you had when you beat the game. So, like, there's this huge emphasis on money in the story, but then if you don't care about the ending you get, it doesn't really matter, but it matters mechanically because you have to pay money to go, like, to a checkpoint, and you have to pay money to open the door that lets you end the level. Like, you can end the level with 0 coins, but only if you spent your last 10 coins to open the door. So that, like, it's not a bad thing. Like, but I realized when I was jotting down notes about that, I was like, oh, this is the opposite of the checkpoint mechanic in Shovel Knight. In Shovel Knight, you can make the game harder by taking the money out of the checkpoint. In Wario Land, you make the game easier by putting money into the checkpoint. It's like, that's
which I think was their way to ensure that you are at least playing some portion of the game, because, or at least, you know, to where you're not like just blazing through and trying to skip as much as possible. Because, and to be fair, a lot of the coins are like gimmies.
Oh yeah,
you know,
money is not scarce.
No, and were they in your natural path? You know, like, you would kind of have to go out of your way to avoid some of them. But for some of the levels with, like, the jet helmet, I noticed that I got to the exit. Like, there were some areas where I was like, oh, I'll actually play this part of it, right? And had I not done that, like, I got to the end checkpoint with, like, just enough money, like 11 coins or something like that, just enough to get out. And so I think that that's their way of saying, like, yeah, if you blaze through and don't play the game at all the way we want you to, then you're going to have to go back and actually play some of this game, because we're not just going to let you, you know, jet helmet or bull rush your way through everything and then not actually do any of the mechanical challenges.
Yeah, which I, you know, is, it raises questions, right?
Yeah,
it's a way to do it, but it also is like, why is locking the door so that I'm trapped in this room with your game the way you make me play your, you know what I mean? Like, to literally say, if you don't play the game we want, you can't move forward in a way you're aware of. Because, I mean, every game is like that. If you don't play the game, you can't progress in the game. But this game really shoves it in your face that if you don't play the game, like, the door is locked, you literally can't finish the level. And it auto saves in between levels. So can you imagine, like, batteries are about to die or the car ride is about to end and you're like, oh, I made it to the end of the level. I only have 9 coins.
Nine coins.
I have to go back.
And you just, no. And then the game dies, you know. That would suck. And I do like how you likened it to Shovel Knight, because I think that
it even looks,
and again,
kind of the
same.
It's the big, like, orb.
Yes. And again, this is in an era where midpoint checks weren't really a common thing. So, you know, at the time it was very much so take it and growl. But is the difference is that it is a positive feedback loop in that it is a negative thing, which is that if you are playing poorly, it is more likely to punish you for that, you know? So, like, with Shovel Knight, you know, if you go through and you hit a checkpoint, you're like, I am really confident that I can play this game well. I'm going to therefore opt in to, you know, doing, you know, knocking out this checkpoint. Then you have now said, like, okay, I'm doubling down, you know? But with this one, is if you just happen to be a less skilled player, you know, then the game has now become harder because you have been robbed of your checkpoints.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of this stuff is all, I think any Mario game, because it's a long running franchise, I think it's fair to say even the main title Mario games, Super Mario, whatever, you know, World and Galaxy and 64 and all that stuff, like, I think they're all, okay, we thought of this mechanic, and the mechanic is fun, or we think it'll be fun, now we're going to make a game around it. Like, it's hard to believe they thought of the entire story of Super Mario Sunshine. Based on what I know about how they make games at Nintendo, I really think someone was like, hey, what if Mario had a squirt gun? Let's make a mainline Mario title that uses that mechanic somehow. Like, I genuinely believe that that's how they do it. And I don't think, even though this is a Wario game that gave them the freedom to be further from what they were positive would be fun, I really still think that's kind of all any Mario game is, hey, you remember that game you played on the original Nintendo in 1985? Okay, well, this is that, but with like some other stuff. I mean, they're all just run from here to there and also some other stuff. And I'm not downplaying it, but like it's
move from left to right.
With 30 years and it doesn't look like they're slowing down anytime soon. Like eventually some of the mechanics had to not be winners, right? It's not like this game is the only Mario universe game where some of the mechanics are like, it turns out this isn't that fun, right? Or this implementation sucked. We have to go back to the drawing board.
Or like the camera in, you know, Mario 64. I mean, like, you can't innovate if you never take risks. So definitely, and obviously, I can't speak for sure on the timeline of this, but I don't think Super Mario Brothers 3 had midpoint saves, did it?
I'm going to confidently say no.
Yeah, I also think no. So unless the Super Mario Land titles did, I think that this is the next one that would have come out, right?
No, because this is what's weird about the Game Boy. So when do you remember in the beginning when I said this game came out?
94.
Do you know when Super Mario World came out on the Super Nintendo? 1990. But that's what I'm saying, is the Game Boy, this is like, Mike and I went through the same thing when we played Link's Awakening on the Game Boy, right? Like, that came after Link to the Past, and yet they still managed to screw a bunch of crap up. Like, it's just, it seems almost flabbergasting when you put them side by side that way, but I presume, for one thing, the Game Boy engineers are not the same as the Nintendo, Super Nintendo engineers, because at this time in history, there was like zero overlap in those skill sets. You had people who were dedicated to this platform and this, you know, what it was capable of. And I'm presuming, but it feels like a safe assumption. But there's a lot of stuff that in Super Mario World, you would say like, oh, well, surely this was obviously borne out as being the right way to do it. They'll never screw this up again. And then you can see a ton of games where they screwed it up after that, because they just really love to experiment, I guess.
Well, yeah. And so then, you know, like, so, you know, this is going to be a deviation from my original argument, but, you know, that's the awesome thing about, you know, was it like reason is that you're able to, you know, when faced with new information, you can change your worldview. So basically they said, okay, you got Super Mario World, midpoint saves. That is absolutely the way to go. Okay. Let's start toying with that then. Let's experiment. What if you needed to hit some kind of criteria in order to get the midpoint save? What if, you know, you had to have coins or hearts, or you had to be big in order to do it, or you had to be small, you know, like whatever, right? And so they said, well, what if coins? You know, what if they were coin operated? And then they said, nah, it's probably not the way to go. So I think that this is just kind of an experimental title.
Well, and there's two things we've been dancing around with money that I think are worth saying explicitly. One is the ending of the game, like the castle or house that you see is based on how much money you have. I mean, that's just for the player, right? It doesn't dramatically affect anything. But if you want to get a one-up, it's not money, it's hearts, right?
It's hearts.
And so there's all these different ways you can lose money, and you can spend money, you can gamble money in between every single level. But none of those affect your ability to collect one-ups. And so they knew they were toying with coins and what coins did and how they behaved in the universe and why you would care about them. And I think it was very smart of them to decouple how many lives you had from that. Because if they were like, could you imagine as a player being like, well, I have 99 coins. I think there's probably some other close to here, but I would rather get this checkpoint, right? Like that's, I don't think that would be a fun mechanical decision for a friggin' 9-year-old to have to make. Like I think it was the right idea to say, we're going to mess around with money, but we're still going to make it exactly as easy as it. In fact, it's even easier to get a one up because when you get a heart, the heart counts as 10 hearts. When you kill an enemy, that counts as one heart, which I decided means that you are killing them and ripping out their heart, which is why you only get the one, because they only have one heart.
Yep. Yes. Or I mean, because it is like those visually, it's those, you know, kind of Valentine's hearts. So, I mean, it may not actually be their physical heart. It may like be their soul or, you know, like their essence. Right, because then that would explain why the hearts that you get out of boxes are 10 hearts, because those have been distilled, the distilled souls of 10 people. It's like a philosopher's stone.
There you go. I was going to say it's like beer versus spirits, like, but yeah, no, I prefer to think of it as literally distilling human essence into some kind of condensed, powerful, magical artifact that gives you a one-up. Wahoo!
Which makes sense because these Denzians of Wario Land, right, are these misshapen half things, right? So in order for you to create an essence of a true, you know, Mario knockoff of a true Wario, right, you need 100 of their souls, right? So, and the reason why this is it, and the reason why this is a Wario game and not a Super Mario game is because it would take 1,000 souls to make a Mario, and they couldn't. So they used 100 souls, and so it's a Wario. So
It's Redwater. It's not a true Philosopher's Stone.
Yes, absolutely. And one other quick aside, when you said it's beer versus spirits, it did take me a quick second because we were just talking about souls to realize that you were talking about liquor, and I was like, how are those two things the same?
What kind of
like,
messed up spectrum versus, is that?
It's like, you know, on one hand, you've got, you know, delicious beer. And on the other hand, you have the human soul. Am I right? Are you? What?
Next time we go to a bar together, I'm going to see if I can order, like, especially if it's like really noisy, right? Because then like a, I don't know, what's something that's like a Smirnoff, like vodka or something, right? So go in and be like, you know, I'll have a one human spirit. Sorry, what? A shot of Smirnoff.
A shot of Smirnoff ice. Yeah,
not a shot of Smirnoff ice. Smirnoff vodka. I mean, I guess you could do a shot of Smirnoff ice.
You could. You could do a shot of Seattle Brow. No, but like now you gotta you go in right and you know you're like okay. You know, beer versus spirits, they're on the same spectrum. And you're like, what? You're not even talking about the same thing. It's like, okay, so, you know, for $10 million, would you, you know, kill a horrible person, right? And it's like, well, yeah, sure. And you can use that money to buy beer. So now we've established that my premise is sound in principle, and we're just haggling over price.
That is the magic of a universal third good, is you can almost always connect two disparate things through the magic of money. Yay, capitalism.
It's the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
And 1 degree, which is way worse.
Yeah, and I said all that to say I liked the mini games in Mario Land. I thought that was an gambling? Interesting... Yeah, the gambling. Especially because it is just gambling because there's
it is
not
really gambling. It is not games of chance.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it's not what is it the thing that the Daily Fantasy Sports say so that way they can get around.
Oh, that it's a game of skill.
Games of skill. Yeah, it's not a game of skill. It's like which one of these two buckets has a 10-ton weight in it, and which one has apparently 10 tons of gold in it. Yeah, that makes sense. So anyways, I like that.
I messed with that a lot more at first and then eventually found myself just like hard passing through it. And it's not because I had any problem with it. I was like my last two or three playthroughs when I or play sessions, like when I finally beat it, I was like kind of getting into a groove. So like I would finish a level and I would just be like holding right. I'm just like, yeah, I got it. Okay. Yeah. Like more platforming. And so like I was messing a lot more with it at first. And then I was just like, yeah, I've got enough money to finish level, whatever. This is fine. And then that's where I got the birdhouse ending.
Yep. Yeah. And so, I mean, like I said, like, I also kind of did the same thing where eventually I was just kind of like, yeah, all right, I'm kind of done with it. But I did enjoy it. I liked that it was there. I might go back and like dip my toes in it a little bit, but you know, I enjoyed it. And that was actually the last note that I had that I wanted to make sure I touched on. What else? Do you have anything?
Nah, bro. I'm good, bro.
All right. So all that being said, did it hold up?
So I grappled with this.
Okay, real fast, just quick aside, like peek behind the kimono. Sometimes when you go into the episode, you have like a certain rating, and then we'll talk about it, and your rating will kind
of
change a little bit.
Oh, that's
happened
tons of
times.
I think I've even admitted it a few times.
Yeah, like there's definitely been times where I like went into it, and I was just like, this is how I feel about this game. And then as we're talking about it, I'm like, I feel better or worse.
Yeah. My rating hasn't changed over the course of our discussion, which... I don't know if that's necessarily good or bad. Like if you make compelling arguments and change my mind, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not, but I think it's neutral.
I did stress a little bit about this because I really was annoyed by the game at first. And then by the end of the game, I was like, this feels like a pretty solid accomplishment. Like I was struggling super hard with the mechanics because my brain was so like, this is a Mario game. And then I eventually was like, no, it's a Wario game. Here's the things I'm good at. Here's the things I suck at. Here's how I can deal with these platforming challenges. Here's the enemies that if I have to see one more time, I'm going to blow my freaking brains out. Like there was a clear progression of improvement and I enjoyed that. I didn't really enjoy the game that much. Like, by the time I was done, I was just like, yes, I beat it. And I kind of don't, like, I'm not relieved. Like, I'm satisfied that I finished this terrible game, but I'm also not, like, elated. Like, yay, I beat this game. That was really fun. I'm so great, right? Like, so I was really obsessing about the rating I had for it. And I finally had to settle on it. I was like, no, to enjoy this game, you would need nostalgia goggles. To play it, you could probably get away with a nostalgia monocle if you're just tolerant of what the Game Boy was capable of, but I gotta go full nostalgia goggles. It's just not that enjoyable. Like it's all doable. Mm. It's all fine, but it's not, I didn't really enjoy, like, and we've made this reference plenty of times when it was relevant, and I think here it's supremely relevant. Like, I didn't love this game. I didn't hate this game. And nothing this game. Like, I just, when I was done, I was satisfied that I overcame the last boss because the last boss took me many attempts. But then I was just like, all right, I'm done. Like, I'm done. I did it.
Good.
Yeah. So hard nostalgia goggles for me.
For me, it's a nostalgia monocle just because I think that this is a game that, and this is interesting because the way I would recommend, you know, kind of like playing it is the way that you did, which is absent-mindedly while doing something else.
Just sub out whatever time, like, you spend on Instagram for playing Wario Land.
Basically, yeah. I mean, like, because when I was playing this game, you know, it was kind of nice in the sense that, you know, because the challenges were relatively straightforward, I could generally, you know, jump past a whole lot. Like, it was very easy for me to just, like, pause it and then go do, you know... Like Teddy would like walk over my legs and, you know, I just like, you know, whatever, you know, just stand still or die, or, you know, his death isn't punished super hard or whatever. So to me, it was more of a nostalgia monocle experience. Like to me, because of course, having a three tier system of like, this game is awesome, you should go play it. This game is mediocre, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. And I mean, because, you know, like nostalgia goggles, we've put games such as, you know, Gauntlet Legends in there, you know, so yeah, so it's definitely like, you know, our rating system is a little flawed, but yeah, perfect. It's perfect. No notes. But that being said, is that I think that the best argument I can have is that do you remember? You remember the Game Boy cartridges, right? Like they were, you know, like the way they kind of looked and the way they kind of snapped in place, right? they were those small squares. So it has to be good because squares are good.
The curtain falls. The music plays. The credits roll. Then it all fades to black. And you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone. There's no player two there by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head. From the time that you spent traversing the land, battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creep in with the edge of a smile.